Hello, True North. I'm Deborah Lucero, and I'm your host tonight on Butte Views and Beyond, a show about the things that make our region special. Events, cultural happenings, artistic endeavors, museums, tourist spots, interesting entrepreneurs, and more. These special things add up to cultural diversity, community development, and economic opportunities, making the True North a wonderful place to live. Tonight, I'll be joined by a familiar voice on KZFR 90.1 FM, Ray Lager. We'll be talking about cultural districts, historic buildings, the upcoming Arts Summit in February, and much, much more. So stay tuned. Butte Views is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events, including Arttoberfest, Chico Palio, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by Hasbeans Coffee and Tea Company, specialty coffee roasters and purveyors of fine teas for over 35 years. Hasbeans has two locations, the cafe and Galleria on 501 Main Street, and the cafe and bakery at 1080 Humboldt Avenue, offering fresh baked pastries, hot and cold drinks, and catering too. For more information, visit hasbeans.com or by email info@hasbeanscoffee.com. Well, welcome, everyone. I know we are all crazy getting into the holiday spirit. Some of us are hunkering down and sitting by the Christmas tree and calling up friends and family and having friends and family visit. And before we get started, I just want to dedicate this show to a longtime friend, Charlotte Ann Higelman, who we lost this past just recently. And I just want to say that she has always been an inspiration to me. And in fact, a show like this was truly inspired by her little piece of heaven and paradise, which was up in Sterling City. And it was the Sterling City Hotel. Got me kind of thinking about historic buildings and what kind of historic buildings there are in the centers of downtown and what they mean to a downtown. And how they can be important. So anyway, this one's for you, Charlotte, because I know you're looking down and you're still, I'm sure, tuned into the Zephyr. All right. So welcome, Ray. How are you doing over there?
I'm doing well, Deborah. How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. It seems to me that when we came in the building, we started talking about this very building and how old it was.
Yeah, historic buildings and kind of their presence and how you know. I don't know, it's just a different feeling when you walk into a building that's over 100 years old and it has a presence, and especially this particular one, which is one of the taller buildings, if not the tallest building in Chico.
Yes.
We get a nice view off of the fire escape we were looking at tonight.
Well, you know, it's a great view of the Christmas tree and the downtown Chico area and really how beautiful it is. And so I started trying to find some data on this building, which is called the Waterland Breslauer Building. And it was built in 1914. So it's just a little over 100 years old. It's hard to believe. John Waterland, one of those for whom the building was named, was in his day a historian for the city of Chico. He was known as the Old Timer. Manuel Breslauer was a local businessman who at one time was one of the wealthiest and most influential in Chico. The Waterland Breslauer building has been renovated several times. It now houses the Chico Paper Company downstairs, as well as other offices and businesses, including KZFR.
Yeah, also cotton parties down there and Baker's Birkenstocks, too.
Oh, yeah,
so
that's
most
right.
Most people know those storefronts.
That's right. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that there's like three more floors going up. The corner, believe it or not, was once the site of the Chico Presbyterian Church, which moved over to its new location. And one little known fact that I learned that I thought was fascinating is that when they built the Presbyterian Church, the bricks that were used in that church actually came from a Reading brick company called, I believe it was Holt and Gregg. And at the height of that brick manufacturing facility, they were making 36,000 bricks a day.
Wow.
And they were some of the finest bricks in the North State. So you find them in buildings all the way from Dunsmuir to Sacramento. Well, as far south as Chico right now, but it's said the ones we know of go south to Chico. So the congregation outgrew the church, which was on this site, and in 1909 it was replaced by the one on First Street. So that is the one that we now know, and my understanding is that Annie Bidwell had a lot to do with the building of that church. She helped finance that. So now, something else that was interesting is that in this building, it housed the Healds Business College. It occupied the upper floors, which would be the third and fourth floors, and a variety of businesses were on the street level. And there are some historic pictures. If you get out and you Google it, there is a downtownchico.com walking tour that's kind of interesting. It gives you a little bit of facts about some of these cool buildings downtown and what they meant. One of the reasons that I've been getting so interested in historic buildings is because the city of Reading in the 60s basically tore down 36 historic buildings to create, at the time, the largest covered mall in America.
Yeah, I think a lot of Chico people, or the older people have been around a while, remember driving through Reading and seeing that that interesting architectural project.
Well, you know what's crazy about that is that, you know, there was a thriving downtown, Market Street, California Street, up in Reading. It was thriving, but malls were becoming the thing, and there was no mall yet. And some of the businessmen there got together and decided that, you know, this was a good idea. And it really only lasted about 10 years because literally the day that they finished putting the roof on the Reading Downtown Mall, plans were already in place and ground was broken on the mall that now exists over off of Dana Drive. That's the one that houses Macy's up in Reading, and it's the new mall.
Right. No, Hilltop is basically
Hilltop. Right.
Basically
off of Hilltop.
Yeah. And when was it completed? Did the roof go on?
It was like 64, something like that. 64, 65. But they literally demolished 36 historic buildings, and some of them were amazing buildings. I mean, you can imagine a downtown that looked a lot like Chico, but there were actually a lot more hotels because it was right on what would have been, I guess, old 99, right?
Right, sure. Yep, 99 rolled right through it. And like it is too, you know, it's the old 99 became Interstate 5, so it was the gateway to Portland and Seattle and, you know, up and down. So Reading has always been kind of that hotel kind of stop. Especially
right.
Before you get into the mountains, and if there's bad weather, you got to stay somewhere. And if you're coming the other way and it's late at night, and you're like, "Phew, I finally got out of the mountains alive. I need to have something to relax and go to sleep."
Well, there's, you know, the thing about it is that in studying what older buildings mean, there were some interesting facts that came out. They did an economic study on blocks in cities that were completely new construction versus blocks that have historic buildings and then maybe new construction and then maybe another historic building or something like that. And those blocks that had more diversity actually outperformed blocks that were either all old, you know, old blocks that looked old, or all new. So it was that diversity in look and appearance that actually created a more dynamic economic situation, which I think is very interesting.
Yeah, that is. I mean, you would think... I would kind of think it would be the other way around, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, you know, there is a campaign called This Place Matters by the National Registry of Historic Places. It's actually a national campaign, and they look at places that matter. And in trying to find historical information just about downtown Chico, I was kind of astonished that, you know, there's not a list of, you know, all the buildings downtown and when they were built and who used to live in them and, you know, old historic photographs. I'm sure that stuff must exist somewhere, don't you think?
Yeah, I would think so somewhere.
I hope so. But there is rather a short list that the city has done, a PDF of some of the historic buildings. And there are some really, you know, beautiful buildings. I mean, we all know, we know this one, the Phoenix Building. That's on the southwest corner of 3rd Street and Broadway. And it now houses...
Broadway Heights is up on top, is the restaurant up
right
there. And then there's a there's the Hero Place downstairs, Mediterranean food, and also Spin Again Records just moved in there.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a real classic right on the corner of 3rd. Everybody knows it. Oh, the Bonajohn's, the yogurt place.
Yep,
that's Bonajohn's. Where every kid wants to go there.
So it was built in 1889 by a gentleman named Jerry Noonan. It has housed a variety of businesses, as we all know, if you've lived here long enough, including, believe it or not, a meat market and a hardware store. At times, it has played a central role in the commercial life of downtown Chico. It was gutted by a fire in 1975. After being rebuilt, it was dubbed the Phoenix Building, rising from the ashes. And I remember, actually, when it was gutted, and that's one of the reasons why the Phoenix mural is painted.
Oh, really? On
yeah,
the side? Oh,
on
yeah,
the side.
That's interesting. So when was the fire?
In 1975.
Huh. So not that long ago.
After being... Okay, so the interior is now a small shopping mall and an excellent example of a historic structure saved from destruction by caring owners and tastefully adapted to contemporary use. So it's reusing, repurposing existing structures to make something beautiful. And actually, you know, when you tear down some of these things, when they're gone, there's just that... The memories are gone. The people might remember vaguely there was something there, but... it changes the heart of a downtown, I think. It changes memories for people. It you know, buildings are important to people. The northwest corner of this intersection was for over 100 years, and I remember this, the home of Lee Pharmacy. Lee Pharmacy was there. And it opened in 1884 by Wesley Lee. It was a leading Chico business and remained a pharmacy until 1994, 110 years. At the time it closed, it was the oldest continually operated pharmacy in the state of California. And guess who's there now? Do you know, Ray?
Tell me.
Starbucks has occupied the location
yeah, okay.
since.
Yeah.
The International Order of Odd Fellows, which was responsible for the original construction of the building, used the upper floors as its lodge. Which I don't think I knew that.
So did it go right from being a pharmacy to Starbucks, or was there something there in the
I think it went right from the pharmacy
to Starbucks yeah, see,
as I recall.
I moved here in 92, and it was not, I don't think it was a pharmacy.
Oh, I think it was. It was a pharmacy for a long time.
Was it?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Well, 94 is when they're saying it quit, so maybe there was something in the interim, but it could have also been vacant, and they were remodeling. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, sure.
If anybody out there knows, give us a call and let us know.
Let us know.
What would that number be, Ray?
895-0131.
895-0131. If you have some information on any of these old historic buildings, or you want to talk about one that you know about, give us a call. All right. So now if we keep on walking west along 3rd Street to the corner of 3rd Street and Salem. Oh, I think we're actually, we have somebody calling.
Put them on. Just keep going.
On the northwest corner of this intersection is the St. Augustine of Canterbury Anglican Church. This was formerly the St. John the Evangelist Episcopal Church, which, by the way, I think it is again. The building was originally at the corner of 5th and Broadway, which is the site of the Chico Post Office. It was then moved to this location in 1912. Uh-huh. In 1982, the building was deconsecrated and spent several years as a Chinese restaurant.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I don't know if people remember that. I completely remember that. I always thought that was so odd. But in 1995, it became a church again. So, you know, for about 13 years or so, it was a Chinese restaurant. It's a beautiful building, absolutely gorgeous.
Okay. All right, great. We'll
so, Ray's getting some info about some cool place. What do you got, Ray? What did our caller have to say?
Our caller just informed us that it was went from pharmacy to Starbucks.
That's what I thought.
And actually, inside there's some photographs of the old pharmacy in Starbucks.
Yeah,
had a lot of you know, the old tin roofing and those
kind
of things. So there we go.
There you go. All right. See, we've got a lot of good callers. People are out there listening, and they remember Chico, and it's fun to talk about what you remember. So. Now, the Episcopalian Church, I'd love to talk to somebody about their memories there, if you attended that church, how you felt when the church went from being a church to a Chinese restaurant.
Nice.
How did, you know, I mean, that's a repurpose and a reuse, which I think is good. I'd rather see that than watch the building go away. So again, you know, it's something that is a possibility. It just kills me when things are torn down. if you keep walking north along Salem Street to the corner of 2nd Street in Salem, to the west, the block which is now used as the public parking lot was at one time the site of the Hotel Oaks. This hotel, built in 1918, was once the hub of Chico's social scene for residents and visitors alike. It was demolished in 1968 after years of decline due to changing transportation habits. So there's a big Hotel Oaks sign, and I don't know if you remember the Oaks. Do you remember the Oaks?
Yeah, the restaurant.
The restaurant, yeah. Which was there on the corner, and now Mom's is...
So was the Hotel Diamond and the Oaks at the same time? Were they next door to each other, perhaps? Or?
Well, I think they were across... I don't know if they were contemporaries, I'm pretty sure. Well, probably... Okay. I'll have to get to that. Let's see. I'm taking this little tour, which is really a cool tour. And you can see this tour. It's called DowntownChico.com Historic Walking Tour. So if you get online, you can go on to DowntownChico.com Historic Hyphen or History Walking Tour. What did our caller have to say?
He was telling us about that he appreciates the program and that they inherited a house in San Francisco built in the 1890s and all the little nuances and, you know, great things about that kind of architecture and things we don't often see these days.
You know, that is, I think as humans, we are so fascinated by hidden things, whether it's a hidden attic door or a hidden cupboard or something that you discover, and there's it makes things more interesting. And when you know, just build cinder block buildings that may be extremely functional but just don't have that same kind of beautiful character, whether it's wainscoting inside or special little alcoves or the shapes of windows or whatever it might be, all of those architectural details just provide such rich things for the imagination. And that's what downtowns used to look like. They had beautiful facades. They, you know, the people that were building these things were masons that oftentimes were Europeans, came over from Italy, you know.
All over. I mean, the craftsmanship that went into that level of buildings, you know, and I mean, obviously post-World War II kind of changed everything, and cinder blocks and mass production and, you know, the steel work and those kind of things, the tilt-up building. I mean, we used to call them pole barns in the Midwest, which is basically four corners, and then you just build around it, and it's, you know, that construction. But the old craftsmanship of the old downtowns is just remarkable.
So let's talk a little bit now about... if you continue to walk north along Salem Street, let's see. Across the street is the building housing the Madison Bear Garden, now, of course, a very popular spot for CSU Chico students and the rest of the town. And it was built by attorney F.C. Lusk in 1883. That's another old building. Look how old these buildings are. This structure was used by Lusk, who had a law office on the first floor and a residence on the second. Lusk was a prominent citizen in early Chico. He was a highly successful lawyer. He was active in getting the state normal school established in Chico, and he had interests in various banks, including the Bank of Butte County. At his death in 1913, it was estimated that he was one of Chico's wealthiest men. The building was owned from 1933 to 1976 by the Native Daughters of the Golden West, who added the pediment-style decoration with a bear motif over the entrance. I didn't know that. See, that's pretty cool, too. So the Native Daughters of the Golden West actually inhabited that building at one time. Actually, for quite a long time, for 43 years. Across Salem Street from Madison Bear Garden is the Chico Museum. This building was originally a Carnegie Library. Thank God for Carnegie Libraries, and some towns still have them. Unfortunately, Reading was one that tore its Carnegie Library down.
Yeah, Oroville still has theirs, don't they?
Yes, I believe so, and Corning still has their Carnegie Library. Many have been privatized or are, you know, law offices or being used for other uses, but I remember going to the Carnegie Library in Corning, and it was the most probably ornate building we had in our town. And the idea that you could put these beautiful, well-constructed, marble staircased, you know, I don't know what the style of architecture is in a small town like Corning and have a library house there. That's pretty amazing. That was very farsighted, I think, of Carnegie.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I know we've been to the one in Arcata, which has Eureka. I think it was Eureka. Has just an absolutely fabulous building. It's just like, yeah, I don't know what the, I mean, it's kind of Taj Mahal-ish, some of them. And they change. Each one has a little different flavor. Chico has a pretty ornate one, although it's rather small compared to like the one in Eureka, which is really pretty big. But again, Eureka was a major lumber hub, you know, in the Gold Rush area and into the 1910, 20, 30s. It was people don't realize how Eureka was a lot of money up there.
Well, the fisheries too, and between the wood and the fish, and then it really was devastated, which leads into the discussion about how Eureka really did reinvent itself. At one time, it had like almost 20% vacancy in its downtown after it was devastated when lumber went out, when the fisheries went out. And what it did is it had a lot of beautiful old Victorian homes, and they began to invite artists in to inhabit those homes and to begin to create artwork and museums, and they literally reinvented Eureka's downtown. And there are only two cultural districts north of Sacramento. One is Old Sacramento, and it's known for its historic buildings, and the other is Eureka. And
really?
And it's a historic cultural district. And, you know, I'm hoping that we here up in the North State, in the true North up here, really begin to see that arts and culture can reinvigorate downtowns. And the third, for me, it's arts, culture, and the third leg of that stool is history. Because you want whatever you're doing in the arts and culture realm to be authentic. So, for instance, on California Street up in Redding, there were 18 saloons at one time. Well, maybe it's a brewery. Maybe at breweries. There's two or three that are, well, three now in downtown Redding, and I can see more coming online up there. I think that would be awesome. Redding was a rough and tumble kind of place, but it got things done, and, you know, the dam was being built, and the dam in the 30s, that was a pretty crazy place. I mean, there were 12,000 people, I think, when they started building the dam, something like that, and then the population swelled to like 25,000.
Yeah. Classic boomtown, and like anywhere else, it's you look at the different areas that have changed, all have gone through the transition, and rather successfully. And of course, those things create tourism, which creates jobs and money and people coming in and interest and pride in your community and your city, and it's a good thing. And this might be a good time to segue. Maybe we'll take a little musical break and segue into a new cultural district coming to the North State.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So what are we going to listen to here, Ray?
You know, I've been playing through the music here, and I just feel like hearing the song. So, you know.
Here we go. It's a surprise.
Why not go for it?
Here we go, folks. Stay with us. Deborah Lucero, Butte Views and Beyond.
Oh,
Hello, True North. I'm Deborah Lucero, and I'm your host. Tonight on Butte Views and Beyond, we talk about things that make our region special, events, cultural happenings, artistic endeavors, museums, tourist spots, interesting entrepreneurs, and more. And I am joined tonight by a familiar voice, KZFR 90.1 FM's Ray Lager. Hello, Ray.
Hey, Deborah. How about that? A little Chicago here on a nice... couple days before Christmas in 1969, live from Fillmore West. Pretty cool.
Wow. Chicago.
I'm sure somebody out there was at that show.
I'm sure somebody was. And, you know, Chicago. Think about Chicago. What a beautiful city that city is. It's beautiful. It reminds me of a European city. You know, it's got the river running right through it. And
yeah, exactly. Well, again, early designs. Early designs.
Well, so, you know, we had a caller, and they said, hey, don't forget about Oroville, and we did talk about the Carnegie Library, but we would be remiss in not mentioning the jewel of that city, which is, of course, the Oroville Inn, just recently restored.
Yeah, just opened about a month ago. It's now housing students from the Lineman College, young men and women. I think there's about 96 of them that are in there.
See, what a great use. I mean, it's a great repurpose and reuse of a building that many wanted to see torn down.
It was vacant for a long time. The downstairs isn't finished yet, but they are finishing up. I think by next year the ballroom will be done, and that'll be available for rentals, weddings and all these things that have happened there. And then there's going to be some shops in the front, I believe a deli and a market, and not sure what's going on the other side. You know, it used to be the Oroville Tavern. I think the sign is still...
Yeah, the original sign is still
there.
Bud
Tracy, that's doing the redevelopment on it. The sign is exposed now. So pretty darn cool, and what a great project. That building, Herbert Hoover spoke there. Ronald Reagan spoke there. It was one of the gems of the West. It was the victim of bad timing. The construction was finished like in 1929, like right when the stock market crashed.
It was actually dedicated on June 1st, 1930.
And
beautiful. I mean, the design was 19th and early 20th century Spanish colonial revival style, popular in California during that period. And it has, you know, the impressive dimensions and modern conveniences. We actually had the fortune of going up to the very top of it, which is so cool to be up on the roof and overlooking Oroville. And we also got to go all the way into the basement, which had this incredible well.
Right. It had its own fresh water supply. Pretty well. We were allowed to go in with a couple of different groups when they first reopened it and just saw how bad it was. I mean, it was pretty bad. There was a water leakage that went on for months, and there was
years, probably.
Yeah, years maybe. There were, you know, transient people, you know, inhabiting it and that. And then to see it now, I mean, I got to go in like the day they did the dedication and see all the rooms, and they all have their own air conditioners and refrigerators, and it's just completely modernized and pretty cool.
So interestingly enough, the Oroville Inn, when it was first built, immediately became the entertainment and social center of the area. It's at the time was also the tallest hotel in California north of Sacramento. There have really been no alterations, additions, or other changes that have affected the historic integrity of the property, which I believe is on the National Registry of Historic Places. Although the Great Depression descended across the nation just as the inn was completed, Oroville continued to be a prosperous and busy place because the gold dredging industry was at its height, and the construction of the new Feather River Highway from Oroville to Reno was just getting underway and had not abated. So there were some wealthy investors in the hotel, like entrepreneur Walter Higgins and Wendell P. Hammond, developer of the first successful bucket elevator gold dredger in the world. And they made sure the quality of the service was never allowed to diminish. Considered the finest hotel along the highway between Marysville and Reno, with a private bath in every room, the inn was patronized by most visitors to the region, including famous movie stars, politicians, engineers, and even military personalities. So I think people are going to be looking a lot more at the Oroville Inn, and if you haven't been over there lately, you got to get over there.
I can't wait to do we're already talking about doing to coincide with the Parade of Lights, hopefully next year. a Christmas celebration afterwards in the ballroom. I already told Bud, I said, listen, we're doing a Christmas party here as soon as you guys open. So really nice place. And, you know, the thing with downtown Oroville, I mean, what was it, 22 or 26? They had a devastating flood.
It's when it's 26, maybe. Yeah.
They put the levee project started coming in. The downtown is still so historic. Those buildings are, you know, most of the downtown is original buildings. A couple have burnt down. Where Miner's Alley is, used to be on that corner now, it used to be the Union Hotel, which had burned down, which is now called Union Square, which is that outdoor area that they have next to the brewing company. But Oroville is definitely on the swing. Things are happening. And again, those buildings, it's just like it was.
Well, you know, as you know, my mom was born in Oroville, as was her mom.
Right.
And they had a historic building. We found some newspaper articles from 1888, I believe, where her great-great-great-grandfather, I believe, he was known in town for playing baseball. Oroville was somewhat of a baseball town.
Yeah.
And he married a Klaus, K-L-A-U-S.
The Pickles, weren't they? The Oroville Pickles? Isn't that the name of the team?
I don't know if they were
the Olives?
The Pickles. Oh, I think it was, I don't know. I can't remember.
It was something like that.
Yeah. No,
I think
it was Pickles. It was Pickles.
It was the Pickles, yeah.
Yeah, because the guy who sponsored it, that was his business or whatever.
Relish the thought. Sorry. Couldn't help myself.
Well, anyway, they got married in the Klaus home, the family home, which was, I believe, on the corner of Huntoon and right Arlen, well, what is now Arlen Drive, which, of course, wasn't there because that's the levee. But it was right there where it would have been.
It's kind of where the Centennial Plaza is, and it's kind of on Huntoon Street where there's now like a little PG&A substation,
right.
Like a pump station, which of course I don't know if that's all going to be redone in construction because at one time there was a gas station there. After that, anyway, PG&E is cleaning up the soil under that parking lot this whole next year. So who knows? They might find some your great-great-grandmother's forks and spoons or something.
I don't know about that. But, I mean, when you go to look at it, it's not there anymore. And I was thinking about how they must have, you know, they eventually moved out onto B Street, out into the B Street area, which...
Higher ground,
you know, not getting flooded out every year, which I'm sure is what happened.
Yeah.
Because you see a lot of flood pictures from Oroville.
Well, it's interesting. I had just sat in with a meeting there a few weeks ago with people from the Supplemental Benefits Fund and consultants. And there's a lot of projects under consideration. Of course, flooding isn't an issue now because you have the dam. And it's all very controlled. And the Feather River in Oroville right now is absolutely nothing like it used to be. It used to be a real big river, and there was ferrying going across it, and there were large ships or boats that came up and steam and power boats that serviced the area. So there's actually word afloat to remove the levee because it's not needed anymore. Hmm. And then would create a view of the river from downtown.
Which would be awesome. Although I do like the levee, you know, I mean, it's just that if they're going to, I don't know, you know.
Well, they wouldn't take it all the way. They would take that section out, you know, kind of from the Green Bridge down, I think, open it up over towards Riverbend Park. So where then the levee kind of goes away. So anyway, it's interesting.
Didn't they just built the Veterans Memorial Park over there?
Yeah, well, hopefully that'll stay up there.
All right, well, I think that could be an issue. So, you know, just to continue on this vein just slightly, a little bit longer. So I guess a lesson would be, you know, in Reading where literally, 36 historic buildings were demolished, you can go to a town like Oroville where pretty much everything is exactly as it was 150 years ago. There may be some buildings that have burned down, but there are some beautiful buildings over there and it's an amazing downtown. Or you could come to, like, Chico. When you look at Chico's downtown, it still has many of its original buildings. And I think a lot of that is because they haven't turned over a lot. You know, there haven't been a lot of owners. There's not a lot of downtown owners.
Well, and they've been lucky enough to be, there was no flooding, you know, no major fires that devastated a lot of the area. You know, there's always some movement. The university, I'm sure, has expanded and, you know, but having the Bidwell House right next to downtown, I think, helped create that.
The Bidwell Mansion. Yeah.
And I think the university system decided to protect that.
right?
And kind of keep that going and expand in other directions. But even look at Northern Star Mills. I mean, that place has been going on for 100-something years. Even Trace Ombres, that building, that was Bidwell's seed or grain company. Wasn't he in competition with Northern
it
Star?
It was his general store.
It
was his general store. So what happened is, there's some great pictures again on downtownchico.com. Thank you for this wonderful little history tour. This 1915 photo shows the Presbyterian Church with the gateway. And you can see to the right of the church is the gateway to the Bidwell property. So, the Bidwell Mansion is just, behind that. On the southwest corner of that same intersection, now Tres Hombres, a restaurant, that was John Bidwell's general store. And the building had a second floor and a front porch and a balcony, which are all now removed. About the only parts of the original building that are really still identifiable are the windows along the north side. And they're those arch, round windows. Uses of the site has varied over time. It's been home to the Chico Post Office, at another time to a library. It's survived a number of remodels and fairly recent, nearly a disastrous fire. But again, it's still with us. Across from the Bidwell store is the building that now houses Collier Hardware. I mean, this building is one of the oldest buildings in downtown. It was built in 1871, and the lower floor housed the George F. Jones Hardware Store, and the upper floor was occupied by the Masonic Lodge and the Oddfellows Lodge. The Oddfellows Lodge, the IOOF, moved to the corner of 3rd and Broadway in 1884, but the Masonic Lodge continued to use the facility for another century. A century, folks. Except for the period from 1913 to 1915, when the Chico Post Office occupied the first floor, there has been a hardware store almost continuously in this location, of course, Collier's, since the 1940s though the ownership has changed several times. So, since 1871.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
A downtown hardware store.
Yeah, well, you got to have one.
Man.
Well, you have the Blue Room Theater upstairs.
Yeah.
And you have that area. There's a business there, but it was a rental area, and they did...
It used to be an event place.
Yeah, they did different events there.
Right.
I've been up there a few times for meetings.
Something room, and I can't think of the
room. The Aurora
Room. The Aurora Room, yes.
That was really... That was
cool. I actually did events up there.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. We just had a caller that... mention, I know we haven't talked about this, but we know a lot about it, which is the monastery in Vina.
Oh, yes.
And how, that was purchased by William Randolph Hearst, which was they dismantled it in Spain, I believe.
Yeah, it was in Spain. Took it apart stone by stone and labeled every single one of them with the intention of putting it back together on his property. And then...
He went bust.
He went bankrupt. He stored it for like 20, 30, 40, I don't know how many years in warehouses.
My favorite part is, so then they decided that this is worthless, so they threw it in the bay as fill to try to landfill, and then somebody said, hey, what are you doing? And they pulled it out, and it was rebuilt and moved up to Vina, up to Stanford's property.
Yes, which was originally Stanford's property, and he had the largest vineyard, I believe, in the country, maybe even in the world at the time.
Well, in the country for sure. And oddly enough, he was able to continue to make brandy during Prohibition because he was Leland Stanford, I imagine.
Well, and oddly enough, that's how they financed Stanford University in the beginning.
So what did Stanford, he must have bought Hearst out, penny on a dollar when he was going down and found out about his monastery that they were chucking the stones in the bay for landfill.
That was later. That was later. Good story, though.
Yeah, good story. Love it.
I guess what you can say here is that we love our downtown in Chico. We love our downtown in Oroville. We love our downtown in Redding, even though a lot of it's disappeared, and we're trying to bring it back. Every single... right now there's a fight on to save the Bell Rooms in Reading. The Bell Rooms were originally constructed in 1908. The old City Hall was constructed in 1907. And those Bell Rooms were constructed as a brothel. They were a brothel for, all the way through the Depression.
Right there where the train stopped.
Well, it's a beautiful old two-story brick building. A lot of people didn't even know that there were bricks under there because it had been painted for so long.
Right.
But people lived in those rooms until 2014.
And there was an automotive shop next door or part of that building?
Yes, Bing's Automotive was right next door, and they had this roll-up doors there, and they...
Well, if you've been to downtown Reading lately, which again, just like Oroville, these places are really rebirthing again. There is Woody's Brewing Company, which is kind of their restaurant, brewery, fun place. Gets a lot of business. I mean, we tried to go there this summer. We were up there, and at 6 at night, they said, sorry, we're full. We will not have a seat for at least 2 hours. So I suggest you go somewhere else. I mean, it's happening. And if you're on that, what is that name of that street?
That's Oregon Street.
On Oregon Street.
And that's the street that they're literally on, which is one of the most historic streets. It has a lot of beautiful old historic buildings and houses still on it. Yeah.
You would walk past the ballrooms. That's that whole kind of what you're trying to call the red brick district.
Yes, we're trying it. Well, it was called the red light district for many, many years for obvious reasons. And I think a good use, since this is an authentic part of Reading's history, would maybe call it the red brick district. There's a lot of buildings made of red brick.
Especially because they used to make those red bricks right there in Reading.
Yes.
That serviced all of Northern California, which was the Holt Brick Company.
Yes, Holt Gregg. Yeah, and as I said before, the Presbyterian Church, the bricks in that church came from that company. So, I mean, history is such an awesome thing, and it has so much power for our story. We all need story to understand where we came from, to understand what's important to a town or to a city. I think children should grow up with understanding what a downtown used to look like. I remember when the downtown park was orange trees and beautiful big elms and all of that, and things change. And so it's kind of fun to look at old photographs and go, wow, it looked like a forest in there, you know, before they...
Well, the City Plaza used to be a forest. I remember when I first moved up here doing art shows in there, and it was had the gazebo in the middle.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, you'd walk through there. It was like a little downtown forest. It was pretty cool. You know, unfortunately, those trees got diseased and were taken out, but it's been how many years now? It's been 10 years now or something?
Oh, it's been longer than that. I think probably 15 years maybe.
It was a big shock when they took those trees out to everybody that lived here. It was just like, there was a lot of uproar. But, you know, things happen, life changes. And anyway, it was...
we've got big trees again now, finally.
Yeah, they're growing
up again.
They're
starting to grow.
Yeah.
So, folks, talking about the cultural district, and just, you know, just to touch on that, we do have something important coming up in Chico, which is actually going to be held at the Chico Theater Company. And that is what Friends of the Arts and the City of Chico Arts Commission are holding a symposium to explore the opportunities and strategies for sustainable growth of the arts. It's going to be held at the Chico Theater Company. It's an art symposium. We have presenters from the Fresno Arts Council, the City of Reading, the Alameda County Arts Commission, and the Executive Director of Blue Line Arts, which is in Yolo and Sacramento counties. It's a consortium of several different arts agencies. And it's a look at how do we continue to grow the arts, particularly in the city of Chico, where the Arts Commission was rather brought to its knees by the lack of funding and maybe just doing things the same old way. And we got to find new ways, just like we were talking about. Things change, and we need to look at things in a new manner. So,
is that a public event? How's that working?
You know, actually, it is by invitation to arts organizations and to cultural organizations and to educators, people that have an interest in the arts. It's limited seating, so obviously the reason why I'm letting you know about this is because I think it's an important next step for the Chico Arts Commission, and I believe that if all of the groups can come together and kind of re-envision what the arts could look like and what they could mean for the city of Chico, I think it's going to be an important next step.
Yeah, nice. And then also, I know up in Talking about Reading and that area, there's different groups that are involved in trying to get downtown Reading as a cultural district.
Yes.
To join the other two, one in Sacramento and one in Eureka.
And, you know, it was interesting because the head of the McConnell Foundation, Lee Salter, just retired from his head position. And John Mansacola is the new head of the McConnell Foundation. But I was pleased to hear that one of the things that they are going to focus on is downtown Reading. And I am hoping to keep culture on the table. And it sounds like they are wanting to do that. They have an interest in the historic bell rooms, to not see it torn down and to not see it be used as a parking lot, which is what they want, what the city and the local bus authority would like to do right now. So it takes a lot of voices to keep things on the table. But it also takes money and investors and people that can afford to, you know, retrofit a building that was built in 1907.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things, and again, as everybody's aware, we live in a changing time, and it's really important to have your voice heard. And people listen, you know, believe it or not, and, you know, they might not listen to one or two, maybe not 10, but when it gets to 100, they start to listen. And when you put 500 people in a council chambers or 1,000 emails, all of a sudden things slow down a little bit.
It does.
Then look around and go, okay, what is the who are we serving here? What's the greater good? And it's interesting because the, you know, the whole situation in Reading, it's like, you know, it'd be different if there was need, but there's not. There's all these vacant lots that are fenced off, and when people drive through and they're coming in from I-5 and they just roll through and they're thinking, okay, there's nothing here. Well, then they start to see things, and they go downtown, and they see an old historic town and a restaurant. And
a brewery and,
right,
you know, beautiful lit up areas. And
right.
I mean, people are coming to Reading. You know, I can't tell you how many people walk across the Sundial Bridge. When you walk across that bridge, how many languages you hear going across that bridge.
Yeah.
It is an international, iconic image now that people go to. And so... And they are going to have the very first 4-star hotel north of Sacramento.
Right.
That's huge.
Yeah, the Sheraton is moving into the grounds of Turtle Bay.
Correct.
Which will be great. Yeah, and you know, it's the same. I mean, you don't realize that. Again, I was with some folks, and we were talking about Lake Orville Visitor Center and Lake Orville Dam. You know, they get almost 500,000 visitors a year.
Which is
unbelievable. You think, wait a minute. You're telling me hundreds of thousands of people go to that, and they do. They go to the dam.
Right.
But then where do they go?
Right, because nobody tells them where to go. And that's the one thing with state parks, folks. There is right now, I'm just trying to find the notice because I think this is important. This is what this show is designed to do, is to give people information about things that could possibly make our local area better in terms of arts and culture and tourism and interesting entrepreneurial concepts. And right now there is a state plan survey. They are seeking input through January 16th on the sustainable preservation of California's statewide historic preservation plan. I can't tell you how important it is to do these things and make your voice heard, because if you'll remember in our town, right here in Chico, they were going to close the Bidwell Mansion, and there were many of us, and I credit Maria Phillips with really rallying people, including myself, to get together and make our voices heard, that it's not acceptable to close down one of the most iconic images in the town of Chico, the Bidwell Mansion. And guess what? We were heard. But it took all of us to do that. So they are doing
How would people, the survey you're talking about, is there a website, Deborah?
Yes. It is ohp.parks.ca.gov. Again, that's ohp.parks.ca.gov. And there is a state plan survey. You can subscribe to their email to keep getting updates. But they are looking... They do I think it's a 5-year plan, and this one ends in 2017, so they're getting ready to re-envision what does it mean for the state to be involved in historic preservation? What does that mean for their historic parks?
How did you find this? Did you just Google State Park Survey?
Actually, I had somebody who works for a local assemblyman sent it to me.
Well, maybe
I was very glad.
Maybe you could put a link on your Friends of the Arts Facebook page.
Okay, Friends of the Arts. I will put it on our Friends of the Arts Facebook page, and I will also put it up on my personal Facebook page so that people that want to participate can. This is the type of thing you need to get involved with.
Yeah.
And they need to hear from us. You know, they put out a public comment session, and then it's over, and if they didn't hear from anybody, they think nobody cares.
Right.
And then when they decide to do something, they close it down and say, well, nobody cared.
Right. And I know that we've been working with the couple different entities at the Department of Water Resources and at the hatchery in Oroville about, you know, you've got all these people, let's start getting some material up there, kiosk material and where to go. And it's happening. It's starting to happen, which is great. And the Holiday Inn just expanded in on Oral Dam Boulevard. So it's coming.
And, it's coming.
The other thing, the different events that are building, Riverbend Park, I mean, it's such a beautiful area.
And a lot of people don't, you know, I'm always surprised at how many people don't get around our own area here, which I like to call the True North, which I think we're going to rename this show at some point, the True North.
I think we already did, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we did. But
that was last month.
Yeah. But something that's fun that's been going on for, I think, more than a decade up in Reading is the Reading Cultural Cruise. And you can take your own car, and it's free, or you can cruise with us on the Culture Bus. So what's really cool about this is that they go to all these different institutions, and there are different exhibits that open specifically for the cultural cruise at Reading City Hall, at Shasta Historic Society. The high schools get involved, North Valley Art League, the Shasta State Historic Park, where you can see some rarely seen still life paintings from the Boggs collection, which is an amazing collection. This is a collection that actually, during this whole state parks fiasco, they were considering selling off this collection, and residents in Reading got together and said, no, this is our state historic park. We don't want to see these assets sold off. So again, folks, it's all about participating and understanding where you live, what your assets are, how important they are to being a resident and understanding your history. Shasta County Arts Council's on this tour. Turtle Bay's on this tour. And then the next day, they have some really cool artist demonstrations. Everything from printing and paper making to actually they are going to show you how to do the art of a latte, doing lattes art in your coffee, tattoo art, which I don't think they're going to actually give you a tattoo, but they are going to show you how it's done. There's another Theory Collaborative is actually going to do, or it might be One Shop, they're going to create a piece of furniture, 3D piece of furniture that they design on the computer and cut out and create.
Wow, that'll be cool.
Isn't that going to be cool?
Yeah, very cool.
So there's all kinds of cool stuff going on, Ray.
Well, you know, just keep your hands on your assets, folks, and stay in touch, get involved. You're going to put some of this stuff, I'm sure the cultural cruise thing is on what, the Shasta County Arts Council Facebook page. And
True North. If you go to truenorthartsculture.org, truenorthartsculture.org, you can also find all of these things. You can organize things by event, by time frame. Again, that's truenorthartsculture.org.
All righty. Well, getting ready to wind it up. Peanut butter and jelly time is coming in just a few minutes. What do you got for us, Deborah?
Well, True North is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by A1 Brake and Alignment, specialists with over 20 years of experience in automotive care. A1 Brake and Alignment services all makes and models of cars, trucks, and off-road vehicles in all forms of automotive maintenance and repair, including air conditioning. A1 Brake and Alignment is located at 824 Nord Avenue and can be reached at 894-1149. And by Dahlmeier Insurance Agency, a full-service independent agents and retail broker since 1948. Dahlmeier Insurance provides a wide range of coverage options for individual needs, from homeowners and auto insurance to farm and ranch coverage. Dahlmeier offers assistance by calling 342-6421 in Chico and 533-3424 in Oroville. Also at chicoinsurance.com. All right, Ray, thanks so much. This is Deborah Lucero with the True North.
Thank you, and again, congratulations to the Pleasant Valley Vikings.
Woohoo!
Winning the state champ. Very cool.
And, yeah, very, very cool.
Yeah. Happy holidays to everybody. Be safe. Be smart. Share some love.
Peanut butter.